Hey guys, this is Ivan from MasculineToMovies.com. It is Wednesday evening. I have recently returned from Malmö, Sweden, where I have recorded the third video in the KWML video series. I did a take on The Magician, and it will come probably within the next couple of weeks. And I'm sitting here right now thinking to do a little experiment. I've been writing 35 articles, reviews for my website so far, and they're all basically they're text-based. And I was thinking maybe it would be valuable for some of you to have me record them in audio, so you can bring them with you on your iPod while going to work, for instance, and eventually I may turn this into a podcast where I may also include interviews and articles and other things that may be useful for you. So this is an experiment, and I would really love your feedback on this later on. And I will do this on The Fisher King because it's the most recent movie review that I did. And the way I will do this is I will just basically read it the way it's reproduced on or printed on the website. And maybe I will feel inspired to add a little bit of extra information here and there. So this is a video that was, it was a text that was published on the 1st of March. The movie is from 1999 and features Robin Williams and Jeff Bridges. Directed by Terry Gilliam. It's from 1991. Maybe I already said that. Oh, my screen just faded out, so some technical difficulties here. And it's a comedy and drama. So here's the synopsis. Self-obsessed New York shock jock Jack Lucas is about to hit it big as a TV celebrity when disaster strikes and one of his radio listeners goes on a killing spree. He is plunged into a dark night of the soul, from which he can recover only through a process of redemption. His chance for healing comes along when Parry, a deranged man who lost his wife to mentioned radio listener, sets his eyes on him and identifies him as the One, the man chosen to reclaim the Holy Grail. The ensuing journey weaves Jack and Parry's worlds together and promises psychological healing for the both of them. But before they can be released from their respective private hells, they must join forces to vanquish the demonic Red Knight who keeps them there. And this review is entitled A Mythic Journey for Modern Man, and that title comes from the scene where Jack Lucas is introduced to Parry's past. Parry used to be Henry Sagan, a university professor, and he actually wrote a paper, which we can see very briefly in one of the scenes. And that paper is called A Mythic Journey for Modern Man. I found out by pausing it and going up really close, and I could just decipher it. So, the title of this review is the same as Henry Sagan's paper. A Mythic Journey for Modern Man by Eivind Figenschou Sjellum. Right out of Arthurian lore comes the famous Fisher King myth, a story about a wounded masculine feeling function and the subsequent healing of it by a fool. It comes in many forms, but the version told by Parry in this movie starts with a prince who has to sleep alone in a forest to prove he can be king. Alone by himself at night, he is visited by a sacred vision of a fire with a holy grail in it. A voice tells him that he shall be the keeper of the grail, that he may heal the hearts of men. The young prince... My screen faded again. I will have to figure this out for the next one. Sorry about that. The young prince is overcome by feelings of grandiosity and reaches in to grab it. The grail disappears and the boy's hand is left terribly wounded. Another version of the same myth leaves him with an arrow through his testicles. which is the version we will not cover in this this review. In all versions of the story, the wound grows deeper as the years pass, and the boy, now king, knows by consequence no joy or love in his life. He is always miserable. He begins to die. And here I want to add that the reason why it's called the Fisher King myth is that the only pleasant activity, his only solace in life, is he actually goes fishing in the moat around his castle every once in a while. Or I think it's actually the river by the castle. So that's why he's called the Fisher King. The Fisher King wound in modern man. I want to examine the wound itself before digging into the movie's plot. In his short book on the Fisher King myth, Robert A. Johnson talks about this wound as, quote, probably the most common and painful wound which occurs in our Western world, unquote. Robert A. Johnson explains to us that it is a wound, quote, in the male generative creative part of his being, unquote, and that it, quote, affects every sense of value in his psychological structure, end quote. I will drop that quote business in the future. That was a bit messy. So how does the wound appear? The playful, active boy who is told to sit down and be quiet receives a shock, or wound, to a nervous system that only seconds ago was so alive. The mother who shames her son's sexuality shoots an arrow through his testicles and wounds his sexual feeling function. Sorry. A son who requests his father's blessing and receives only his aloofness and temper ends up distrusting men and his own masculinity, and a deep wound cuts through his psyche. Robert Bly refers to this as the father's axe blow. That's a concept that he gives in Iron John, I believe. If the wound were only an issue of family systems gone wrong, maybe we wouldn't be so ill off. Alas, the weapons by which the wounds are inflicted are woven into the very fabric of our society, leaving a scarred all over by the time we turn 20. Maybe we divulge an authentic spiritual experience to our local religious leader and find ourselves targeted and programmed like sheep with the officially sanctioned version of religious truth. Or maybe we go to school to learn the soul-devouring so-called truth that the only valid way of perceiving the world is through our rational faculties. Whatever the cause, the wound grows ever deeper. So, in my opinion, the pertinent question isn't whether we have a wound. Rather, it is, how can we heal it? Jack reaches for the Grail. Jack is a deeply unsympathetic, self-absorbed man. He is a shock jock, proudly polluting the hearts and minds of the New York masses with his preferred flavor of nasty. He is about to hit TV screens with a new comedy show on the radio, and in watching his preparations for the show, we witness his visions of grandeur. And just like the self-obsessed prince, God's call to heal the hearts of men is drowned out by megalomania. I interpret the TV show Jack is about to star in as a grail of sorts to his psyche. He muses to himself that for the first time in his life, he will be a voice with a body. This re-embodiment sounds to me like a weak attempt at a return of feeling. A body feels. A process thwarted by Jack's inability to take the requisite move towards greater humility. So, his self calls for a deeper wound to wake him up. Edwin, one of his listeners, goes on a killing spree. Jack is the reason why. It would be misrepresenting the myth to say that this is a typical Fisher King wound, for that wound damages the generative feeling part of his masculine psyche, whereas this event is the start of Jack's long road back to his. But the movie, as I understand it, really wants this to be Jack's Fisher King wound, so I think the parallel works for now. Let me just have a drink of water. Oh, water is good, man. Parry, the White Knight Fool. We return to Jack 3 years later, and images of the tragedy still haunt him as he spends his days sweating out the pain in the back room of his new girlfriend's video store. And then I give a reference to seeing parallels to Nathan Algren in The Last Samurai, and the scene there is that he is caught by the samurai, and he's wounded, and he sweats out his demons in a room in a house in that village, his demons from being complicit to wiping out a whole tribe of Indians, Native Americans. So there seems to be, it seems to be that demons come out by sweating somehow in these two movies, and I think there is some truth to that. So that's why I chose to point it out. Anne is a good woman who loves him in spite of his masochism, and yet Jack goes out one night to end himself. Jack's personal hell is mandatory. It just shows us that under the layers of crap, his soul works just fine. The fall from grace is not so much about deserving punishment. No, folks, I don't think the universe is designed by some grumpy old dude with a stick and an ass-whipping fetish whose name can be called on by people of inferior spirituality and hot temper. It's the worst fucking blasphemy there is. No, the fall from grace is rather the self's clarion call to the universe for help. Help to restore a man's image of himself to its appropriate size. As long as overinflation is occurring, healthy relationship to the divine, or indeed anything at all, is impossible, and the man remains immature, self-absorbed, and absolutely fucking miserable. Trust me when I say, I've been there. In fact, I still sometimes, or was that often, am. Not that often, actually. But it does happen still. I'm seeing some nice images here with captions. I'm not going to read those captions. So that will be your special treat for actually checking out the video review on the website itself. So moving right along. Before Jack takes the plunge, two young thugs appear with a desire to fuck him up. But self-proclaimed knight Parry intervenes with his crazy compadres, and Jack lives. Parry, we find, is absolutely off his rocker. He speaks to invisible floating fat people and thinks he is a knight on a quest for the Holy Grail. Not much later, Jack learns that the cause of his lunacy is that his wife's brains were splattered all over him because of aforementioned Edwin. Jack now feels guilty for creating Parry, the slumdog knight, from the remains of the man formerly known as Henry Sagan, university professor and mythology expert. A bond forms between them. Importantly, Parry is haunted by images of a red knight. The red knight of the myths is generally associated with power, might, and ego. It is a fierce and dangerous energy, yet it is essential for masculine maturity. And there's an article on the webpage called, I think, David Data and the Three Knights of Iron John, which can give you more information about this. The Red Knight appears for Parry when his mind starts reconnecting with the truth of what happened to his wife at the restaurant. Parry himself sees the Red Knight as the reason why he can't get his hands on the Grail, which is why he needs Jack's help. He is, after all, the one, according to the little floating fat people. This Red Knight is clearly very important. Let's get to know this ominous force that separates Parry, and by extension Jack, from the healing powers of the Grail. Getting intimate with a Red Knight. Percival was the fool of the original Fisher King myth, and the story goes that he encounters and kills a Red Knight early on in life. This is just after he goes out, he is inspired to take up armor and rides out into the world to become a knight. And he, I think if I remember right, he kills the Red Knight who threatens Camelot. So he serves King Arthur in that way. The Red Knight also appears in the fairy story of Iron John. In Robert Bly's opinion, he symbolizes the first step on the long road to masculine maturity and is followed by the White and Black Knight stages. True to White Knight form, Percival was a naive young mama's boy who thought he could rescue the world from evil. And maybe a few of us see ourselves in that sentence. I know that I used to be that person. Disregarding the fact that the Red Knight he slays threatens Camelot, it was perhaps not the best thing to do, considering that he spends the next 20 years of his life chasing Red Knight projections. He also fails the first attempt at healing the Fisher King due to fear of speaking up. So speak up, guys, if you have an intuition. This is exactly what we do on a large scale in the West today. We kill or exile the Red Knight because we fear him. Do you fear the Red Knight? I know I certainly have. We imagine he threatens the kingdom. Images of him are turned into entertainment porn on the nighttime news, and then we assign him a different skin color, religion, or ideology to our own. Look at Fox News, you'll know what I mean. I look at Paris Red Knight and see more than merely the gore surrounding the death of Paris' wife. I see the death of Paris' primal masculine power, his own inner red. A man came and blew his wife's brains out. A man, incidentally, who had himself exiled his inner Red Knight. And there was nothing he could do about it. With one spray of shotgun pellets to his wife's head, whatever red may have existed in Henry Sagan was wiped out and externalized as a projection of a demonic Red Knight. The Red Knight is chasing us wherever we look. We project and make others out to be bad, dangerous, even demonic. War on terror, anyone? We see the Red Knight in the faces of good people, terrorists not included. Why? Because we have all had our stories of receiving shocks to our nervous systems while growing up, though perhaps not quite as severe as Henry Sagan's. For some, it was perhaps trying to protect mom from an abusive dad, or perhaps it was being bullied by a kid in school. No king, a kid for sure. Whatever the reason, we received a shock and decided red was dangerous. This fear of red often manifests in a man's life as his longing for comfort and security. Red feels too intense. So we exile it from our psyches, condemning ourselves to a lifetime of paranoia, boundary issues, and projection. This is very crucial, this observation. When you exile the red force from yourself, from your psyche, you will totally read malintention into people who do not carry it. And that is not a very nice thing to do. It will really mess up your life and your relationships. So integrating this red force is so important for your own personal empowerment and happiness. So, now that we name the suppression of red energy that goes on in virtually every modern man, let's enter sacred reality and get this show on the road. Entering crazy time.
Yeah!
After Perry shares his first kiss with his chosen damsel in distress, the Red Knight appears one last time. It is the final showdown. As long as Perry is not willing to integrate his Red Knight projections in a conscious way, he must die to his current self through trauma. The Red Knight gets him, and Perry enters a coma. It is interesting to me to note that the thugs who represent the Red Knight in this scene are the same as the ones who attacked Jack in an earlier one. It suggests to me that Jack and Perry share a psychological theme, suppression of red. Jack realizes that he must get the Holy Grail to wake Parry up from his catatonia. He now gets to prove that he is the one the floating fat people talked about by turning into Parry's Percival. So here we see the myth, the real myth, feed into the movie story very, very well. It's very clear, this parallel. This will make him humble and force him to accept Parry's crazy view of the world. He intuits that Parry's and his healing are intimately connected, as he already shared with Anne in an earlier scene. "I thought that if I could help him some way, that maybe things would change for me," he says to Anne. Parry has something that Jack needs. We understand that particularly from the way Jack reacts to the TV producer who wants him to star in a new show about homeless people. Jack is horrified, and rightly so, by the depraved worldview that would enable a man to glorify other people's suffering and turn it into shits and giggles. He should be slapped. Instead, he turns his back on this career-furthering move and favors honoring his new depth of soul. In Parry resides something that he needs to get more intimate with. Which leads us to crazy time. What is that I hear, you ask? It is a term referring to the sacred time a man has to enter once he is called there by his archetypal self. In crazy time, normal flow of time and space ceases and a vast archetypal landscape opens up before the man. Without a good guy, this landscape can consume him and make him go nuts, like Parry. It is not necessarily an exactly pleasant experience. And this is the magician archetype, this territory. And I'm going to be speaking more about this very dynamic in the video that I will release soon on the magician archetype. I have some personal experience with this. When I was in my early 20s, I literally feared I was going insane. I feared I would end up doing something horrible one day. And picture that. I'm not sure why I'm telling you this. I would end up stabbing someone to death. It wasn't that I wanted to. It was just that the red knight energy inside of me was so thoroughly suppressed that it was in danger of consuming me. And no mentors or guides were there to help. In an old indigenous culture, I might have been made shaman. Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette tell us that shamans were always chosen among those who exhibited signs of psychological instability, because that was seen to be an expression of a psyche finely attuned to the mysterious dimensions of the magician archetype. A man's journey through crazy time teaches him enormously valuable lessons about psychological and spiritual healing. For me, it has manifested in a profound understanding of how razor thin the edge between sanity and insanity is. I see clear as day how easy it is to be driven to murder by inner voices. The old cultures would call them demons. I call it suppressed psychic material. And ultimately, this experience has made me question what sanity really is. I see many people our culture would label sane and think they are out of their fucking minds. Such reflections make a man a good fit to be shaman. There was an idea among the Inuits of the Arctics that any demonic force that the shaman-to-be had not already been consumed by would be outside of his field of influence once he assumed his fully embodied shamanic role. It explains why I consider my failing psychological stability from my early 20s one of my life's greatest gifts. We see how references to crazy time is spattered all across the movie. And when you understand this concept, you will understand that when Jack finds himself in a situation surrounded by seeming insanity, And in this movie, these places that are ironically healthcare institutions, the setting is ripe with healing potential. In our ignorant part of the world, however, we decide to medicate against crazy time. I believe this is one of the most important reasons for why we live in such a soulless society. Crazy time is soul time, and there is very little soul in Prozac. Reclaiming the Grail, a merging of worlds. Jack enters the Fisher King castle and reclaims the Grail from the library of a dying billionaire king, and in saving him, Jack too becomes Percival for a time. When Jack returns to the hospital with the Grail, so-called Grail, I must add, a merging of worlds seems to have taken place. I need some more water. The throat gets dry when you talk a lot, have you noticed? I think crazy time has been integrated into Newton time, which is my invented expression for linear time. It's actually based on an expression from William Blake, which is Newton sleep. Integrated into Newton time, and that Jack and Perry emerge on the other side of their quest together on the third and last stage of the process of constellating the magician archetype explained by so many scholars of world mythology. And that sequence, that process goes like this. 1. The call. Life conditions force you to take on a new perception of reality. This is... you get an intuitive hit that you must change your life, basically. 2. Crazy time. Also... 2. Crazy time. Also called liminal time or sacred time. Which is where the deconstruction of the old reality takes place. And 3. Re-entering Newton time from a new perspective. Psychological integration has taken place. At any rate, the Red Knight curse is gone. Anne and Jack are back together and happy. Perry has his damsel and is happy as well, as you can imagine. And Jack and Perry go cloud-busting nude in Central Park together. At the end of the day, who cares what happened? As long as you can break apart clouds with your mind by lying nude next to a good buddy. Hang on. Am I going crazy? No, could be. Powerful ideas from the Fisher King. 1. The Fisher King wound is a wound in a man's generative part and affects all parts of his psyche. It is ubiquitous in the Western world and prevents most men from developing a healthy masculine emotionality and a joyful and impassioned life experience. 2. Jack's hubris is followed by his nemesis. When a man develops godly pretensions, his self will step in and facilitate the man's fall from grace. So be careful. You have a fully working self, and it will sabotage you for your own good if you develop extreme self-inflation. So take heed, guys. This is important. This is where you get to take responsibility for your own life experience and not blame circumstances and other people. This is what maturity looks like. 3. Jack's Dark Night of the Soul is a requisite process of transformation. Without this suffering, he would not have found maturity. So when you yourself experience authentic suffering, keep this spiritual context in mind. It will make it easier to navigate hell. 4. We repress the red energy in our society, which, as I read this, and put it in context with hell, I can see why. Living in a pretty Christian culture, hell is fire, brimstone. You know, it's red. We're afraid of hell. We're afraid of red. We repress the red energy in our society, and by consequence we turn into disembodied white knights who see projections of red all around. Which incidentally is probably not unlike a lot of Christians who haven't owned up to their inner demons and see as a consequence the entire world as demonic. It's a pretty sad thing, actually. Millions of people suffer from this. 5. Modern man's perhaps biggest challenge is re-embodying this red. He must heal his boundary issues, defend himself from the forces of chaos, withdraw his projections, and return from his ascension trip into spiritual or intellectual la-la land. Through plunging into these primordial red waters, the Black Knight starts to materialize within us, and we will become a powerful force of good in the world. This is a journey that you should start right away. 6. There is a huge treasure hidden in psychological illness. In ancient cultures, shamans were picked amongst the psychologically unstable men of the tribe. By the time the would-be initiates got through the psychic wilderness, hopefully under the skillful guidance of an elder, which rarely happens today, he had obtained profound insight into the nature of psycho-spiritual healing. 7. To drink from the grail, a man needs help from a fool. What this means is that any man who places undue importance on his intellect will remain shut down, unable to drink from the grail. 8. To access the healing power of the grail, a man will have to enter crazy time. So don't be boring, guys. It prevents your healing. And this is where I want to add a very important footnote. My good friend Peter, he said to me that he would have liked to have some more insight into the various types of insanity that may manifest in our lives, and I immediately saw his point that if we are trying to fake insanity in a way that is an ornament to our ego, maybe we do it to look good, to feel special, to rebel against someone, any such thing. That really isn't entering crazy time. The point here with the Fisher King myth is that, first of all, he's a fool. And you don't appear like a fool to adorn your ego. That's not something that you do for egoic reasons. There's something much deeper going on here. So if entering this crazy time has a flavor of looking good, or if there's like a tension of being watched, of trying to perform, that's exactly not what I mean. This is much more a sort of a freedom of the soul to express itself as it wants. And to have the discriminating insight to actually separate the two may actually take some work. And I may send some of you guys on a quest of ego fulfillment right now. And that's not my intention. Apparently, the old Taoists, they had as a practice to walk around and be crazy and become the laughingstock of their culture, of their contemporary society. That's not looking good, guys. This isn't about looking good, really. But it will make you feel good. At least eventually. I can't even guarantee that this is such a subjective, an individual process. But I promise you that I will offer more resources to explain this landscape in the near future, and The primary one will be, I think, the video about the magician archetype, which I said has been recorded and has good information on exactly these things. So, I think that's the end of this first take. It turns out that I've been speaking for more than half an hour, and I hope that it was a good use of your time, and I'm sure I will post this on a blog post, and I would really appreciate if you could give me your feedback. Was this useful to you? Would you like me to do more of this? And would you like me to turn it into a professionally produced podcast with jingles and everything? I would really appreciate that. So, for now, goodbye.